On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, a podcast series brought to you by our good friends at Insurance Journal. And today we're talking to Mitch Doust, who's Executive Vice President and Head of the Americas for CoverGenius. And we're going to talk more about B2B platforms in the insurtech space. Mitch, thanks so much for joining our podcast today.
No, thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to be on mine.
Yes, and I thought we could start out if you could just tell us a little bit about how I see you worked at Trove, which is another insurtech. Just a little bit about your background and what brought you to CoverGenius.
Yeah, sure. So I've been at CoverGenius now, I guess, for the past 9 months. So I joined in April of this year. I head up the Americas region, which basically is coverage over North America, Canada, and Latin America, with responsibility mainly for the establishment and the growth of our kind of regional domestic business there. So, we are a global platform and we do have customers in those regions, but up until now, we really haven't laid down a lot of kind of foundational roots for the business. And so, I've been focusing on the establishment of that and now the rapid growth of that. And as you mentioned, prior to joining CoverGenius, I was at Trove for 3 years. So I joined basically to help kind of establish their business in the UK. So prior to Trove, I was at a company called Suncorp in Australia for a number of years. And I was actually working on the partnership and product development for their partnership with Trove from the other side. And then, kind of liked what I was doing, was excited about where I thought the potential for technology was going within the insurance kind of ecosystem. So kind of took that opportunity to join, what was a team of great people and to help push that forward. So I did that for 12 months and then moved to New York shortly after moving to the UK. And then for the remainder of my time there, I essentially led the development of their kind of global network of underwriting partnerships. So as global head of BD for those guys. In that time, learned a lot about where I thought the value was within the InsurTech ecosystem and where I thought some of the growth was and where the opportunities were. And then I'd actually known Chris and Angus, the two founders of CoverGenius, for a while, fellow Aussies like me. And then, I was really excited about the potential of the platform, what those guys were doing, and kind of the rest of history up until this point.
Okay. So just a thumbnail maybe on what CoverGenius does. For those that, I believe the URL, covergenius.biz.
Yeah, so at our core, we are essentially a digital distribution platform for insurance products. So we work with e-commerce companies in the broadest sense of the word. So basically anyone that's transacting online, if we think there's an opportunity or a need for an insurance solution that can sit alongside the core product or service that's being sold, then we work with those e-commerce companies to basically build tailored solutions for those customers. We maintain or manage the entire end-to-end process, both from a technology perspective and a regulatory perspective. And essentially, we just bundle up those services into our API infrastructure, which we provide to our partners. They then use that to embed our insurance products and services into their front end. And then we can start to provide or embed those insurance solutions alongside their core products. So we're building products currently across many verticals in that space. We've had some really robust success over the last couple of years in the travel space. Our priorities for the moment are to continue to build out that platform. We've invested a lot of time and resources in kind of the broadening of our capabilities there over the last 12 to 18 months. And we now have the ability to transact in 60-plus countries worldwide, and we're continuing to build out that technology.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't run into you in Las Vegas at InsurTech Connect last October, but it's no surprise since there were 6,000 people there. I wonder your impression. I mean, this is a worldwide gathering of, entrepreneurs, investors, and, insurance people. And then hybrids thereof, but it's a pretty astonishing environment of, this ecosystem called InsurTech. But what was your impression, Mitch? Like, what were some of the conversations you had that you could share about where this whole thing is going? Because it's now been maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. We've been talking about the term InsurTech as it is today. I mean, technology has been around longer, but I guess this new generation of InsurTech.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's pretty clear that it's quite an impressive event. You know, I've been going to these things for a number of years now, and I guess that was by far the biggest and I guess most well-developed event I've been to. I think it goes to show, you know, the amount of interest and resources that are getting poured into this space. There's representation at InsurTech Connect, not just from incumbents who are looking to do new things, not just from the startups, but also from players from outside of the insurance industry. And to me, you know, that was where I found InsurTech Connect to be really valuable. I mean, from our perspective, we've got a lot of valuable partners in the kind of carrier space that support us globally to bring our products to market. So for us, when we go to things like that, it's more about how can we see if we can generate some customer interest and potential partnership discussions. And so, to be honest, I was a little bit skeptical about how much value we would get out of an event like that, given it's you know, very kind of laser focused in on the industry itself. But I was actually pleasantly surprised at some of the conversations and opportunities that we were able to generate. And I think that is because if we don't distribute our products through insurance companies, we distribute them through e-commerce companies who, generally speaking, haven't had a lot to do with the insurance industry up until that point. So those types of companies coming to an event like that are coming there for a reason. They have something that they want to explore. They've got a high level of intent. And so for a company like ours, getting into those conversations, we found people to be quite open to new opportunities, quite eager to hear what we could do. And I think it's a bit of a telling sign that I think the value and the applicability of the solutions that are getting built within InsurTech are now starting to have resonance outside of the industry itself. And I think that's kind of a key turning point. I think, you know, a lot of the buzz and a lot of the attention around the sector, to a certain extent, up until this point, has largely been inwardly focused on itself and kind of self-generating a lot of buzz. But I think now that, what's being created has use cases outside of insurance specifically, I think it's a good sign for the ecosystem generally.
Okay. What can you say about the B2B space versus, I'm sorry, yeah, B2B versus B2C? And any trends there? Because a lot of the noise created by the, at least here in the U.S., maybe North America, there's been, maybe Australia as well. There's been the rise in past decades of very large direct writers or captive agent carriers in the P&C space who have gotten, you know, putting a lot of the investment into technology and marketing and such. So they're big brands now. But does this new world afford smaller brands and new brands the opportunity that wasn't there before because traditional marketing has really shifted dramatically?
Yeah. I think there's a couple of things going on there, and it's kind of fundamental to how I think the InsurTech ecosystem is going to evolve over time. I think, like previously, if you look at the big, you know, retail carriers, the way that the value chain was structured is they really had no choice but to go direct to the consumer. You know, they had to raise capital, they had to forge a pathway to market, they had to manufacture these products, and then they sold them under their own brand, largely because it was the only way that they could do it. And technology hadn't evolved to the point to make like seamless distribution through multiple channels cost effective. And so that kind of gave rise to these, you know, huge monolithic carriers with these massive marketing budgets and, you know, what they believed to be very strong and valuable direct brands. I think what technology, you know, truly enables, and you know, this is what we believe and it's true of our business model, is that it actually lowers the transaction cost between each of the different activities that sit within that value chain. And so, you know, what it should do, or what the InsurTech ecosystem should enable now, is much greater diversity of players in each of those different activities, which, you know, in theory should kind of break up that kind of linear value chain that we've seen before and start to create a whole lot more diversity and a whole lot of different pathways to market, which should enable, you know, an expansion of the B2B2C distribution capability of the market, which is largely what what we enable with our platform as well. And so I think that's one element of it. I think the other thing is, you know, with the huge influx of interest and capital flowing into the InsurTech sector over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years, it's created a lot of interest, not just from insurance companies and existing participants, but also from entrepreneurs that previously had nothing to do with the industry. And I think that's a good thing, because it brings a lot of creativity and external perspective to some of these big problems that I think, you know, the indoctrinated industry probably struggled to solve previously for a number of reasons. But I also think that a byproduct of that is these entrepreneurs come into the InsurTech space and they apply that creativity to the problems that they can see. And generally speaking, they are the pain points that they've experienced in their own lives to do with insurance products. And a lot of that largely comes down to customer experience. So I think if you were to categorize the evolution of InsurTech to date, you would see that a lot of the innovation and a lot of the startups that we saw in kind of like the first phase are very much focused around B2C user experience improvements and innovation. And that's a great thing for the customer, and there's a lot of value to be created there. But also I believe that unless you're creating a product that is so markedly different that it creates a new category, that you're still going to end up competing with the Geicos and the Allstates of the world who, you know, still have these multi-billion dollar marketing budgets. And I think what you're finding now is that a lot of those B2C models have, you know, hugely prohibitive user acquisition costs associated with scaling their product. And so I think the natural kind of evolution of that is you're going to see a lot of these B2C players either evolve into a more B2B or B2B2C distribution model and start actually monetizing underlying platforms rather than front-end user experiences and products. And then you'll see a lot more kind of the next generation InsurTech business models focus more around the B2B space. I just think from an economic perspective, it's a much more efficient means of getting to market. And then also, you know, I don't necessarily believe that, you know, B2C distribution is what the customers want either. I mean, I think why aren't insurance products just natively embedded alongside the products and services and activities that customers want to do? Why do customers have to go searching for an insurance solution independent of, you know, buying a house, buying a car, going on a holiday? I just think it's a more efficient way to embed protection in a customer's life is to have it sitting side by side with what they want to do.
Yeah, a lot of things you're bringing up, Mitch. I want to ask you, when you say B2B, is there room in that concept for the independent agent or broker in that space? Or are you thinking more some of the other platforms you said outside of insurance even that you guys have been working with? Like, where do you see the – maybe I should ask you the question a different way. Do you see a role in the future for the independent commercial agent and broker?
Yeah, so I mean, when I talk about B2B, you know, I talk about independent platforms that typically haven't been distributing insurance products previously. So, you know, we do a lot of work in the travel space. So one of our partners is, you know, rentalcars.com, which is part of the Booking Holdings group. You know, we're kind of bypassing traditional distribution channels to embed our products at that point. I think that's something that the technology enables. I personally think that, you know, carriers and, you know, broker networks and things like that that aren't thinking about how their business model needs to evolve to counteract or to reposition in light of the fact that technology can actually bypass some of those activities are going to find it really difficult in the future. I think what that means, though, is that the industry is going to kind of split itself up into different kind of product lines or activities, and those existing players are going to have to be laser focused on where they actually add value. I think, at least for the near term, there will definitely be a place for a broker or agent who can really add value to a customer in terms of understanding, you know, what may be a complex risk portfolio, and then, you know, making recommendations about products and solutions that fit that. But there's also going to be some products where, you know, that kind of advice model just isn't required. And using leveraging data sources that we can collect, and we do this now, you know, from independent data sources or from the partners that we work with, you know, we can solve that kind of risk
assessment or underwriting issue with technology rather than an advice model. And, you know, I'm not convinced that the existing structures that are in place are actually super effective at doing that. So I think there's a lot of change coming for those guys. No doubt there's a role for them in the future in some capacity. I just think it looks a lot different to what it does now.
Yeah, okay, good. Good point there. In terms of, you mentioned the word embedding or embed. There are some products, you know, consumer products, and there are some platforms, insurance protection platforms, that do indeed embed the coverage with the product itself. So it isn't a separate buy. I'm trying to think of an example. You buy a toaster and it comes with insurance for its life, which may or may not relate well now to the homeowner's coverage that you get that covers all of those things. You rent a car, you get the coverage for that. There are some things when you buy a tank of gas, you get coverage for the lifetime of that tank of gas. So I guess the word embedded, maybe I'm using it wrong, but it's an interesting concept, Mitch, because you're not having to think about it. It's included in the purchase. It sounds like you guys are involved in some of this already with rental cars or travel. How do you see that playing out? Because I can see the pros and cons of the concept of embedded protection.
Yeah, so, I mean, in my view, where I think, you know, the insurance industry is headed over a longer period of time is to actually have, you know, these protection solutions just be part of the activity that you undertake in your life. I think, you know, customers now have to go and purchase the asset or purchase the holiday and then go and search for an insurance product that kind of fits that risk profile. I think the reality is that customers, you know, have never been and are no better today at assessing risk as it relates to the things that they want to do. So I think it's kind of the better or more efficient solution is just to have technology do that and for customers to just go about their lives and feel protected. So I think insurance is going to go along that path, similar to how kind of the payment space has evolved in the kind of the fintech sector over the last probably 5 to 10 years. You know, that's becoming more and more embedded in everyday activities. And as a standalone service or product, it's kind of disappearing into the ether and just becoming part of, you know, everyday activities. And I think, you know, insurance is and should follow that same path. I think, you know, kind of as I said before, there will always be some things that will be, you know, super complex and technology will have to catch up in a lot of areas. But I definitely think that's just the better solution. I think customers should just be protected in their lifestyle. And it's kind of incumbent on us and the rest of the industry to figure out how we can use technology to enable that.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept because people are protected in that scenario as opposed to being underinsured or not insured at all. And that happens a lot in society, especially I think in commercial lines. You see a lot of people just don't have any or the right coverage. So if this continues in that path, you'd have that issue solved, which is a good thing.
I think
go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say that there's a lot of people that remain underinsured because of the existing kind of way that the ecosystem works. But then you've also got people who are overinsured. So there might be embedded solutions in certain products that customers aren't aware of, and they go out and purchase, you know, additional cover, which basically doubles up. So I think the ultimate solution is, you know, a responsive set of products that actually mean that customers are optimally covered and not necessarily double or underinsured.
Okay. A couple more quick questions. What is your overall impression in recent years, and maybe as we look into it's still early in 2019 now, so what for the rest of this year and beyond, are you seeing the insurance industry, I this is an overgeneralization, I apologize, but the P&C insurance industry responding with a little bit more urgency to what's happening out there? The impression I got originally was that it was more of a denial or sort of deer in the headlights, not a lot of reaction to what was going on. But it seems now there's a lot more sense of urgency and a sense of the need to partner with some of the newer thinking and some of the newer money that's coming in. Do you agree with that? And what will be the net result if I'm right about that?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, you know, the retail carriers specifically were very standoffish at the start. And now, you know, that's probably fair enough because they built these quite robust business models that have kind of stood the test of time for a long time and haven't really been challenged. Over the last couple of years, I think you've seen some of the reinsurance companies and the other kind of more flexible capital providers start to participate directly behind some of these insurtech platforms, which is essentially cutting out the middleman to a certain extent, right? So I think that's created a bit of a forcing function for the rest of the market to take, you know, insurtech and the innovations that are happening within a little bit more seriously. I think if you look at, you know, InsurTech Connect now, I think, you know, you couldn't say that the industry generally isn't focused or supportive or doesn't have some sort of intent around, you know, the investment in technology. I think the big question for me is, you know, how effective will any of these, you know, incubators, venture funds, labs, et cetera, actually be in evolving these huge incumbent business models? You know, I think if I was to be kind of cynical, I've seen time and time again, both working on the inside and on the outside of these organizations, just how hard it is for them to get out of their own way when they actually have a tangible project to deliver in the innovation space. I think the way that these businesses are structured and the resource allocation processes that are kind of embedded in them just means it's almost impossible for a lot of these big guys to actually do something truly experimental or innovative, because it's very hard to justify those investments, you know, when they're stacked up against, you know, a $100 million investment to tweak a core system, which, you know, has quite a clear monetization logic to it. So, yeah, I'm kind of on the fence as to how effective it's going to be. But I think, you know, as we're seeing other capital providers come to play, then, you know, you don't necessarily need a lot of the retail carriers in a lot of circumstances. So I think the pressure's also on them to figure out what their own role is going to be in the future.
Oh, man, I couldn't agree with you more. I if there's any place that I'd be nervous, I'd be working at a regional or a super regional insurance carrier right now, because I can see they're getting squeezed. There's a lot of MGAs that are growing very rapidly, and not just in insurtech space, but just in the space period, going right to reinsurers, and it's an interesting time. But let me ask you just one last question. It's a little off topic, but maybe still relates. Besides the fact that Australia is home to some really cool rock bands over the years, what is it about you guys with the technology thing going on down there, the land down under? There's a lot coming from Australia, and maybe I'm just naive because, you know, the typical American, we think the world revolves around us. But I see there's a number of some really good innovative ideas coming from your country. So how can you explain anything about it? Is there like a Silicon Valley down there that's just a sleepy one or a sleepier one? Is it the education that's going on? Is it the spirit of the Australian people? What's going on?
I think it's probably got something to do with the weather. No, I think there's a couple of things going on. I think generally speaking, especially from like a broader financial services perspective, Australia has quite a favorable regulatory environment for innovation, and it's kind of similar to the UK to that extent. So there's one single regulator. They take a very customer-focused view of regulating activities in the market. And so there's a lot of leeway there, provided you're delivering a good solution. And then I think there's been some initiatives at the kind of the federal government level over the last 5 years, which are trying to encourage and support, you know, technology companies to invest in startups and to start to grow new and innovative products. You know, I think the Australian economy, like, is and has always been an export economy, right? Whether it's tourism or natural resources. So I think to build businesses here, you kind of have to have a global outlook from the get-go. I think that's also kind of supportive of you know, these technology companies having grand visions. And I think also, you know, having partnered with some big insurance companies over the years, because it's a favorable environment, I think, and it's very much far away from a lot of their core markets, it's kind of seen as a good place for companies to do some experimentation. They kind of see it as a bit of a sandbox where they can try things out and see what works, and then potentially kind of platform and take those things into some of the other bigger markets globally. So I think, you know, a lot of those things are kind of working towards, you know, making Australia a good place to do business and a good place to try and invest in innovation.
All right. Well, thanks for that. It's helpful to know that, and I appreciate your time on this recording, Mitch. We'll stay in touch with you. Hope to see you at InsurTech this year in 2019, and I wish you all the best at CoverGenius. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for having me on.